You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the November 2019 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Here's the continuation of the New Establishment 2019. Hashtag Me Too and What Came After. The reporters who helped ignite a movement reflect on its stunning success and the enormous work that remains, by Claire Lansbaum. With their explosive story on Harvey Weinstein, New York Times reporters and New Establishment veterans Megan Toey and Jody Cantor planted a grenade in the cultural psyche and pulled the pin. They pursued scraps of whispers and convinced very unwilling sources to speak out against one of the most powerful men in Hollywood, all the while butting up against a legal system, white shoe lawyers, corporate obfuscation, non-disclosure agreements designed to protect him. The resulting expose divided the modern world into two distinct epochs, before the Weinstein story broke and after. There's definitely been a palpable shift in institutions and mores and minds. Workplaces have installed entire new rule books. Media outlets are much more responsive to sexual scandal, and powerful men are on notice as to how they should behave. Yet on a deeper level, the effects of the hashtag MeToo movement are harder to quantify. Women are still fighting for their place in politics and industry. Donald Trump remains in the White House despite multiple allegations of sexual assault. When writer E. Jean Carroll recently wrote, very believably, of being raped by Trump in a department store dressing room in the mid-1990s, the New York Times hardly treated it as news. Trump has denied the allegation. Meanwhile, men who have acknowledged sexual harassment and worse, who apologized and went underground, are now attempting to resurface. Cantor and Toey chronicle some of this paradigm shift in their new book, she said, breaking the sexual harassment story that helped ignite a movement, which presents a TikTok of their efforts to unmask Weinstein, as well as their reporting on Christine Blasey Ford's agonizing decision to testify against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. They go deeper on the topic here, parsing the systems that have failed, the movement that's picked up the slack, and the new reality it has left in its wake. Hashtag MeToo's unfinished business. Megan Toey. Our article in October 2017 felt like it was just the beginning. We had been able to connect some of the dots about Harvey Weinstein's decades of alleged predation and those who helped him, but there were still so many pressing questions. There was the question of the women who faced wrenching decisions as they debated whether or not to come forward and share their stories. There was the question of the machinery in place to silence those women and try to block our investigation. We wanted to pull the curtain back on that machinery, and we wanted to get into the question of complicity. One of the most pressing questions when it comes to these individual predators is, this was somebody who was engaged in this behavior for decades. Who were the individuals and institutions that glimpsed that wrongdoing, and what did they do about it? Jody Cantor, we say in the beginning of the book, thank you for witnessing what we witnessed, and hearing what we heard. We wanted to bring readers to ground zero and say, go through this process of examining this with us so you can have your own conversations. Now an illustration by Yuko Shimizu, which shows three women with megaphones being outshouted by a man wearing a suit with a larger megaphone. Journalism's power and its limits. JK, at a time when the President of the United States talks about journalists as enemies of the state, at a time when we've all been figuring out what the new financial model is for journalism, at a time when it feels like the truth is fracturing, I think Megan's and my response is to show our work. We are totally transparent about what goes into this, and this is an example of facts driving social change. The reaction to this story was so outsized, and hashtag MeToo has become both an example and a test of social change in our time. We feel that we lived the experience of careful information actually moving the needle and having an impact on people's lives. Since October of 2017, we've been flooded with messages from women who want to tell us their stories. And there have been times when we felt overwhelmed because there's no way that any publication, even a publication with the resources of the Times, could ever get to every one of those stories. So many systems have failed, and of course, we want journalism to step in and do what it can. But journalism can't compensate for an entire system that's broken. The future of a movement. JK, like everyone else, we have been staggered by the size and durability of this movement. It doesn't feel like a news story anymore. It feels like a way of being. I think we all experienced it this summer with the Jeffrey Epstein story, which brings up a lot of the same questions as the Weinstein story. How could this have gone unaddressed or inadequately addressed for so long? How could so many people have been complicit? What is behind this seemingly prestigious world that is clearly masking something much darker? Epstein, like Weinstein, is a sprawling story that's shocking in the sheer number of allegations, the number of women who appear to have been hurt. We feel that you can't solve a problem you can't see, and all of us, collectively, are still in the process of seeing that problem clearly for the first time. And clearly, we all have a lot of work to do on that. We also understand that hashtag MeToo has become controversial. Basically, there are three questions about hashtag MeToo issues that are totally unresolved. 1. What kind of behaviors are under scrutiny? Are we talking about Aziz Ansari? Yes or no? 2. How are we evaluating this information? What are the tools we're using to figure out what actually happened? And 3, what's the punishment or accountability that we're going to use? Each of those three questions is a matter of huge debate. How much has hashtag MeToo changed, really? MT, there's no question that some of the secrecy around sexual harassment and sexual assault has been shattered. For so long, as reporters looking to uncover these types of stories, we were the ones having people slam the door in our face. To have this reversal, in which tips and victims are now coming to us, is massively significant. At the same time, there hasn't been the type of systemic reform that both the accusers and the accused are looking for. For instance, secret settlements with restrictive clauses helped conceal the conduct of Harvey Weinstein for years. Those types of settlements are still being signed every single day. JK, it's confounding because everything's changed and nothing's changed. On the one hand, we've been through a seismic social shift and a change in attitude, and things that were accepted, tolerated, dismissed a couple of years ago are now taken much more seriously. I do think that on a corporate level, people are aware that the reputational risk of protecting a predator is much greater than the reputational risk of doing something about it. The calculus has changed. On the other hand, our basic systems for preventing and dealing with these problems have barely changed at all. Nothing has happened that says to us, legally and structurally, the United States is taking a new approach to this problem. I do think there's a private reckoning that's taken place alongside the public one, and in some ways the private one has been much more powerful. The public conversation about hashtag MeToo has been loud and fractious and controversial. But in private conversations, whether they are in offices or in bars or among old friends, I think what you hear is a much more searching and delicate reevaluation of old behavior. You hear people allowing themselves to be vulnerable and to question things that happened years ago that they accepted that no longer seem right. Sometimes I think that as reporters, we can never capture the true power of what's happened because one function of the news reporting and the public conversation is to drive these really significant private ones that most of us will never hear about. MT, we can't necessarily predict how systemic change will work and how these reforms will come about and what they'll look like. But we can continue to do our jobs every day as reporters, which is to unearth and publish the facts. Next category in the 2019 New Establishment List, the New Hollywood. In a world dominated by streaming, old Hollywood has gone high-tech. Number 1. Ted Sarandos, Netflix Chief Content Officer, Hollywood Disruptor, age 55. In the streaming wars, Sarandos is a general under siege. But with 151 million paid subscribers, his position appears to be strong and defensible for now. We're betting in all the areas of content that our consumers love, he has assured investors. Number 2. Bob Greenblatt, Warner Media Entertainment Chairman, age 59. Richard Plepler's successor has promised to increase the volume without spoiling HBO's secret sauce. Can he please corporate boss John Stankey without unnerving the creatives? Greenblatt says he's bullish. Number 3. Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy, showrunners who hit the Netflix jackpot, ages 49 and 53. Murphy turned FX into an anthology factory. Rhimes once owned ABC's Thursday night lineup. No wonder Netflix offered an unprecedented $300 million for Murphy and $150 million for Rhimes. Rhimes' first series for the streamer begins filming in October. Number 4. Kathleen Kennedy and Kevin Feige, Guardians of the Star Wars and Marvel Universes, ages 66 and 46. The Queen and King of America's two favorite franchises are responsible for lifetime receipts of $40 billion. Next up, going multi-platform with Disney Plus. Number 5. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, writer, actor, fashion icon, and professional wit, age 34. From Fleabag and Killing Eve to rewriting the next James Bond movie, it's about effing surprising people and doing the thing that they're not expecting, she said. It's about truth and honesty and, to be frank, entertainment. Number 6. J.J. Abrams, Star Wars and Star Trek director, mega producer, age 53. With footholds in two of Hollywood's most lucrative franchises, not to mention Mission Impossible, it was simple arithmetic for Warner to offer Abrams and his wife, Katie McGrath, a nine-figure production deal worth between $250 million and $500 million. Number 7. Reese Witherspoon, actor, producer, media entrepreneur, age 43. Witherspoon's production company, Hello Sunshine, is crushing the Bechdel test. With TV projects like Big Little Lies, podcast, a book club, and a mentorship program for women filmmakers. Number 8. Jordan Peele, horror impresario, Twilight Zone revivalist, age 40. The genius behind Get Out and Us is already changing the way Hollywood looks at America. I want to see a black family on the beach, damn it, he told Vanity Fair. That happens, and we've never seen it. Number 9. Ava DuVernay, filmmaker, activist, member of the Twitterati, age 47. A former PR person, she came out of the indie world as the first black woman to direct a $100 million movie and now presides over a sprawling mini-empire. Her drama, Queen Sugar, which she executive produces with Oprah, was just renewed for a fifth season. DuVernay made the award-winning Central Park 5 series when they see us as a reminder of how far we've not come. Number 10, Janet Mock, writer, director, trans rights activist. Age 36. Transgender icon, former sex worker, best-selling memoirist. In June, Mock signed a 3-year multimillion-dollar deal with Netflix that still allows her to continue as a writer-director on Ryan Murphy's FX series, Pose. Streaming wars. Disney Plus, November 12th, $6.99 per month. Apple TV Plus, November 1st, $4.99 per month. HBO Max, Spring 2020, $14.99 per month. Peacock, April 2020, $12 per month. Quibi, April 6th, 2020, $4.99 per month with ads, $7.99 per month ad-free. Discovery BBC Studio 2020, less than $5 per month. Highest paid actors of 2019, Dwayne Johnson, $89.4 million. Chris Hemsworth, $76.4 million. Robert Downey Jr., $66 million. Akshay Kumar, $65 million. Jackie Chan, $58 million. And this data is from Forbes. M&A Power Ranking. Which media conglomerate is holding the best hand? 1. Disney. Marvel, now including Deadpool and X-Men, Star Wars, Avatar, The Simpsons, Toy Story. 2. Warner Media. DC Comics, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Westworld, Watchmen, His Dark Materials. 3. Amazon, The Lord of the Rings, The Wheel of Time, The Dark Tower. 4. Netflix, The Chronicles of Narnia, Stranger Things, The Witcher, The Roald Dahl Library, Cowboy Bebop. 5. Comcast, Fast and Furious, Shrek, Jurassic Park, Minions, Universal Classic Monsters, The Purge. Streaming dealmakers. The SVOD arms race has given rise to the latest envy-inducing indicator of Hollywood status. J.J. Abrams, Warner Media, $250 to $500 million. Greg Berlanti, Warner Brothers TV, $400 million. Ryan Murphy, Netflix, $300 million. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, Netflix, $200 million. Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, Amazon Studios, $150 million. Shonda Rhimes, Netflix, $150 million. Kenya Barris, Netflix, $100 million. John Wells, Warner Brothers TV, $100 million. Next category, in the 2019 new establishment, the arena, musicians, athletes, and executives remaking the entertainment industry in the mobile-first era. Number 1, Beyoncé and Jay-Z, ages 38 and 49, combined net worth $1.4 billion. Undisputed American royalty, they've made great art and more money out of their marriage troubles. As Jay-Z put it, "I'm not a businessman, I'm a business man." Number 2, Ariana Grande, pop's current crown princess, Nickelodeon alum, Pete Davidson ex, social media savant, age 26. "I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it." Number 3, LeBron James, arguable hoop greatest of all time, age 34. In the world, as on the court, James can play multiple positions. Surprisingly talented actor, empire-building businessman, athlete activist role model, Taco Tuesday enthusiast. Number 4, Megan Rapinoe. President Rapinoe, World Cup All-Star, Lesbian icon, age 34. Rapinoe plans to leverage her transcendent World Cup triumph to make political change. "I just think she's the perfect person at the perfect time," says pro-choice activist Cecile Richards. Number 5, Drake, pop behemoth, unlikely fashion icon, age 32. Somewhere between blowing past the Beatles chart records and getting a tattoo about it, Drake transcended the music industry. Now, there's the Drake industry. Hit TV show Euphoria, an esports team, OVO Fest, his partnership with Scooter Braun, and a star turn on the NBA sidelines. Number 6, Taylor Swift, comeback kid, angst weaponizer, age 29. When the internet turned against her, Swift went underground and came back stronger. "I think a lot of people would have perceived that I had torn down the house," she explained. "Actually, I just built a bunker around it." Number 7, Serena Williams, tennis great of all time, age 38. Epochal superpower, feminist role model, still working to surpass Margaret Court's all-time record of 24 Grand Slam singles titles, all while redefining motherhood and unveiling a new fashion collection. "I'm not necessarily chasing a record," she says. "I just got to keep fighting through it." Number 8, Rich Paul, NBA power broker, age 37. More than just the super agent representing James, Anthony Davis, and Ben Simmons. In August, the NCAA instituted the so-called Rich Paul rule, a requirement that NBA agents hold bachelor's degrees. Paul didn't graduate from college. Hours after Paul pushed back in an op-ed, it was hastily repealed. Number 9, Billie Eilish, teen queen, Instagram Pied Piper, emo icon, age 17. "I'm not going to say I'm cool because I don't really feel that. I just don't care at all, and I guess that's what people think is cool." Number 10, Scooter Braun, star manager to the stars, Justin Bieber discoverer, regular on David Geffen's yacht, age 38. Top-tier pop feuds aren't supposed to involve managers, but when Braun acquired record label Big Machine, and with it, to Swift's consternation, the rights to her back catalog, there he was, sharing the headlines with her. Highest paid athletes in millions, 2019, $127 million, Lionel Messi, $109 million, Cristiano Ronaldo, $105 million, Neymar, $94 million, Canelo Alvarez, $93.4 million, Roger Federer, $89.5 million, Russell Wilson, $89.3 million, Aaron Rodgers. Top streaming artist of 2019, total streams in billions, Drake, 5.53 billion, Billie Eilish, 5 billion, Ariana Grande, 4.82 billion, Post Malone, 4.06 billion, NBA Youngboy, 3.49 billion, Juice WRLD, 3.38 billion. Those figures are courtesy of Nielsen Music. NBA Power Couples. In the era of free agency, players are signing shorter contracts and orchestrating trades to team up with their friends. Below, the four biggest power couples of the summer. LA Lakers, LeBron James and Anthony Davis. LA Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. Brooklyn Nets, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Houston Rockets, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. Kardashian clan power ranking. 1. Kris Jenner. 2. Kylie Jenner. 3. Kim Kardashian West. 4. Kendall Jenner. 5. Khloe Kardashian. 6. Caitlyn Jenner. 7. Kanye West. 8. Kourtney Kardashian. 9. Rob Kardashian. Now, for three more of the highest paid athletes in millions of dollars, LeBron James, $89 million, Stephen Curry, $79.8 million, Kevin Durant, $65.4 million. And this information is from Forbes. Moving on to the next category in the 2019 new establishment, the Rockefellers. In the age of social capital, philanthropy is the ultimate power trip. Number one, Mackenzie Bezos, age 49, signed the giving pledge soon after divorcing the world's richest man, wants to combat cancer and homelessness. Number two, Bill and Melinda Gates, ages 63 and 55, Davos regulars, the original big tech bad guy now uses tech and science to attack global problems, malaria, Ebola, polio. Number three, Michael Bloomberg, age 77. The perennial presidential aspirant spent more than anyone on Democrats in 2018 and could do the same in 2020. Lorraine Powell Jobs, number four, age 55. Jobs's Emerson Collective, named for Ralph Waldo, aims to save journalism, buying the Atlantic, and reform education. Number five, Tom Steyer, age 62, impeachment enthusiast and 2020 candidate, promised $50 million to fight Trump, but could spend twice that on himself. Number six, Priscilla Chan, age 34. Zuck's wife is donating their vast fortune, not quite as fast as they earn it, structured their family foundation as an LLC. Number seven, Robert F. Smith, age 56. The wealthiest black man in the U.S. has stepped up his giving game with gestures like wiping out student debt at Morehouse. Number eight, Sheldon Adelson, age 86. In 2018, the casino magnate poured $113 million into supporting the GOP and may spend even more in 2020. Number nine, George Soros, age 89. To the fringe, he's a lefty villain. In the real world, his $18 billion foundation is a critical voice against the rise of the far right. Number 10, Reid Hoffman, age 52. The co-founder of LinkedIn is spending upward of $200 million to disrupt electoral politics using tech principles.
Thank you.
Next category in the new establishment 2019 list, the tastemakers, influencers who are redefining the relationship between consumers and brands. Number 1, Rihanna, age 31. Fenty Mastermind, the first black woman to head an LVMH brand. She's effing God, says model Luca Sabat. Number 2, Virgil Abloh, age 39, fashion visionary. I'm sure that you're trying to challenge yourself to invent something new. That's impossible. Number 3, Kylie Jenner, age 22. Kardashian Jenner MVP, self-made billionaire, spun off Kylie Skin from her $900 million startup, Kylie Cosmetics. Number 4, Gwyneth Paltrow, age 47, actress, lifestyle guru, yoni egg purveyor, turned Weekly Lifestyle newsletter Goop into a $250 million business. Number 5, Stella McCartney, age 48, pushing the boundaries of environmental ethics in fashion, sold a minority stake to luxury conglomerate LVMH. Number 6, David Zwirner, age 54, art world puppet master, super gallerist, Gagosian's longtime rival, continues to expand his global footprint. Number 7, James Jabia, age 56, streetwear trailblazer, pioneered the drop as a business strategy. Our formula is that there's no formula. Number 8, Jose Andres, age 50, celebrity chef, humanitarian, tapas aficionado, sued Trump and now runs aid missions to Puerto Rico and the Bahamas. Number 9, Emily Weiss, age 34, Glossier, turned her blog into the Gloss, into a $1.2 billion direct-to-consumer beauty empire. Number 10, Swizz Beatz, age 41, art collector, hip-hop impresario, created an art sales platform, no commission, that's upending the art industry. The new establishment list for 2019 will continue in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.